And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine station. Podcasts are also available. The full interview could be much longer than the radio broadcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spotify, Blueberry, Player FM, and a lot of other outlets that folks are linking to, and we thank them for doing that. We thank you for listening. If you like what we're doing, if you like what you hear, we ask you to do two things. Number one, when you're listening to the podcasts, click on that little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner. It will take you to our guest's website where you can learn more about what they're all about and the work that they're doing to make this a better place for everyone. And number two, if you like what we're doing, if it resonates with you, you enjoy it, and you'd like to become a part of what we're doing, you'd like to support us financially, we have a PayPal and Patreon account, and we would be more than happy and very grateful to receive your contributions through those methods that are very secure, and I use it all the time. I actually could use my, say, my card number straight through when paying stuff. I prefer to go through PayPal because it gives me an extra level of security. So with that being said, and you'd like to help us, thank you, thank you, thank you for those who have, and thank you, thank you, thank you for those who will. I think you're going to enjoy this program today. We have a lot of programs that we do dealing with a certain aspect of our society, our civilization. Yes, this is part of our civilization, as uncivilized as it sometimes is. We're going to be enjoying a conversation today with a woman who is connected with this part of our society and our civilization, and quite honestly is essential for our continuation. Without them, without this other aspect, honestly, I would have a hard time believing that it would be really worth continuing on in this world. We're going to be talking about the animal kingdom, specifically talking about some wonderful children's books that are available through this author, dealing with true stories about these various animals. Three books that are out now, a fourth that is coming. And my guest is Georgiane Irvine, and I want to thank you so much all the way from the San Diego Zoo, not that far from Santa Barbara. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. It's great to be with you, and I'm excited to talk to you today about animals and the books.
Well, first of all, I love these children's books, these in particular, but children's books in general, especially after producing an audiobook for one gal on her particular work. Had animals in it, but wasn't an animal story, and absolutely loved it. And I looked through not only the incredible pictures in this particular, these three books that I have, but also just the fun. In terms of the text, the story that is told of these, and this is not a fiction. These are true stories about these animals, and in particular, we have. I'm going to take a shot at this. Ruxa and Rihanna.
Well, you're close. It's Ruxa and Reina.
Ruxa and Reina.
Dog and cheetah, best friends. Ruxa's a cheetah, and Reina is the dog.
Mm-hmm. Then you also.
She's a Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Ah. Then you also have Karen's Heart, which is the true story of a brave baby orangutan. A lot of folks will say orangutang, but there is no G at the end, so it's orangutan. And then, just by virtue of the title, and then, of course, the picture on the cover, Fabulous Floyd, the true story of a flamingo who never gave up. And all of these are written by you, and these are true stories of the animals that are there at the zoo or have passed through the zoo there. And then there's a fourth one that is coming that we want to tell people about, and we will do that. But first things first, on these particular stories, how did you choose these three first?
Richard, these books are really challenging to do, and I'll tell you why. Because they're very photo-driven. So these were stories of animals who had overcome challenges in their lives, and they're poignant stories unto themselves. But one of the things we needed to make sure was that we either had photos to include in the book, because every page has photos, as you mentioned, or they were animals that we could shoot and obtain photos to tell the story. And the thing behind these books, it's called our Hope and Inspiration Collection. And what my thoughts were, we thought that if we could connect children to individual animals, like Karen orangutan, they would be able to relate to that animal. And our hope was that it would inspire them to care more about orangutans and all other wildlife, and inspire them also to help San Diego Zoo Global lead the fight against extinction. One of the things we found with these books, not only has it done that, but it's taught kids about life. And so these stories really help kids through different things in their life. And this is something that I hadn't expected, but I've started getting emails from parents. For example, Karen's Heart is about a baby orangutan who had a hole in her heart, and she had open heart surgery. And I've been getting letters from parents who say, my child is having the same type of surgery, and this book gave her the courage. If Karen can do it, I can do it. Or parents who said their kids had had open heart surgery, and they said, this book has explained this to our child in a way that we never could have done so. So the books actually have turned out to have multi-purposes. So the stories were chosen because of the poignant stories, but also because we could document them with photos.
And I guess a very important question to ask is how you became involved not only with the San Diego Zoo, but also how you became involved with animals in particular and your loving and love and caring for them to the point where now you are there at the zoo. And by the way, what is your title there at the zoo?
My title is Director of Corporate Publishing, but this is really my third career at San Diego Zoo. I'm going to age myself, but I have been here for 41 years. That's a long time. A lot of our employees love our mission and vision, which is to lead the fight against extinction. And we stay because we believe in what we're doing and we care about wildlife. And so I've been here that entire time.
You know, I have to do the sidebar on this. As of this recording, and I'm sure you're familiar with the young teenager Greta, who is leading the fight to get the politicians of the world, the governments of the world, to do something about the situation that exists, regardless of whether or not the science is true or not. And I don't know if it is or not. All I know is we need to clean this place up, period. End of story. I don't care what the effects are of not cleaning it up. We need to clean it up, not just for our sakes, but as I said before, these animals are a critical and crucial part of our civilization, of our society, not just because of the zoos, but in terms of our continuing on this planet. And so that's why I brought that up. And I heard her little comments, basically just upbraiding these adults, saying you have betrayed us. You know, and if you don't do something now, we will never forgive you. Whether they care or not, I don't know, but I guess we'll find out. It's interesting, though, that you have been involved for a year longer than I've been in broadcasting. So you got in 78. And I'm curious, working at the San Diego Zoo, as you have, I want to touch upon an area. We'll get back to the stories as well, but I want to touch upon an area that I think is extremely important, and it kind of goes along the lines of a lot of folks who are real concerned about the treatment of animals. I mean, we just heard, a few years back that Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus shut down. Now, whether it was for the reasons that they weren't going to use animals anymore, and so there really was no reason for a circus, or what the cause was, but the zoos are under great scrutiny these days, especially by those who care a great deal about animals. And it seems to me that zoos actually do serve a real ecological, if you will, service to the animal kingdom. How has the zoo changed, especially being that you've been there for 41 years?
Right.
How have you seen the zoos change in general, but also in terms of the people who are now in charge of the care and feeding and the welfare of these caged animals?
I have seen a lot of changes in the zoo world, and I wouldn't say that they're caged animals, but First, let me say that every community has a zoo, and every zoo has at least one exhibit that needs to be improved. And so I like to encourage people to support their local zoo. And in the last 41 years, we have rebuilt multiple areas in the San Diego Zoo to have even better enclosures for our animals. And then we, of course, also have our 1,800-acre San Diego Zoo Safari Park. But as far as changes, when I started at the zoo, there were 1.5 million African elephants left in the world. Now, I don't have the exact number. It's down, I believe, below 400,000. That's a lot of elephants that have been killed for their ivory. So times have changed. You mentioned climate change. The climate is warming. Animals are in trouble. People are in trouble. And I admire the children for taking a stand, because if we don't do something, we are leaving a disaster in their hands. And I'd like to quote my friend Jane Goodall, who says, if we could only give Mother Earth a break, she will heal itself. But there is a lot of greed out there, and people just aren't taking into account how important it is to have a clean climate. So with that being said, and I can speak for San Diego Zoo, we in the last 6 years have a new mission and vision. And when I started the zoo, we were doing conservation work. But we were primarily to zoos. So 6 years ago, when we changed our vision, we changed it to be an organization that is leading the fight against extinction. And we have put our money where our mouth is, and we have stepped up our conservation efforts all around the world, in addition to creating wonderful homes for our animals. And it's really important, because we owe it to the species that are out there. And I look at the animals in zoos as goodwill ambassadors for those species. In some cases, it's for education. In some cases, it's for critical breeding of animals that we have or might return to the wild if there is a safe place to return them, like the California condor. In the 1980s, there were 22 California condors in existence. Think about that. 22 animals. That was it. And with different partners, we have brought that population up to more than 500, with about 300 of them flying into the wild, and having chicks. It took a lot of effort. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of money, but it was really important for us to do that. So zoos have changed, particularly San Diego Zoo, in that we are now a conservation organization that happens to run two zoos. We are in 45 countries on 6 continents, working with 300 conservation partners, because it's critical to work with the local people to protect and study and save animals. And so I have seen that change over the years. As far as the people, from the very day San Diego Zoo was founded on October 2nd, 1960, it's been the people who have made San Diego Zoo what it is today. And so we have always had dedicated people who are here because they love the animals and they want to give them the best of care. I would say so that today, though, our keepers are more highly educated than earlier keepers, who are often just retired people who came to the zoo and loved animals. A lot of our keepers have bachelor's and master's degree, and they have to know science. They have to work with our veterinarians. So I think you have a much more highly educated group of people working with the animals, but these people would give their lives for their animals. They care, and they want to make the best lives possible for them.
I know that there are those who actually have given their lives, especially when it comes to the poachers. I don't know that we have very many poachers in the United States, but certainly Africa seems to be, and that's a huge continent, seems to be a prime region, if you will, of the world.
Yes.
for poaching, whether it be the elephant tusks or the rhino tusks and so on and so forth. The amazing, I want to say mythology, but then again, we don't really know for sure. But they want to get certain parts of the body of a particular animal for certain rituals, for certain medicinal purposes, and so forth. Now, whether that's whether that actually does anything in those regards, we don't know per se. All we know is that by doing that, they're depleting that particular animal's population. And I'm curious as to your observations as someone who has been working in this field for over four decades. What you have learned about the critical nature and the importance of the animals that are roaming our planet, in the wild specifically, as to the link between them, their existence, and us as human beings and our existence?
We're part of the ecosystem of Earth, and animals play a really important role. And first, I would like to go back to something you said. We do know that rhino horn has no medicinal purposes. It is made of keratin. It's like our hair and our fingernails. So rhino horn has no medicinal purposes. And with the ivory, people just have it because it's beautiful. It, that absolutely has no medicinal purposes, but we're losing 96 elephants a day and 3 rhinos a day. That is just shocking. Those are shocking numbers. And it's because of greed in most cases. Wildlife trafficking is one of the biggest, it's a $1 billion business around the world. A $1 billion business. It's absolutely horrific. And I will get to your question, but I would like to mention, we have a keeper at our San Diego Zoo Safari Park who takes care of the rhinos. And on his own time, he went down to South Africa and trained to be on the anti-poaching patrol, which is it's incredibly dangerous because you have poachers with automatic weapons. And every day when this man is down there, he goes out on the poaching patrols. And he sadly told us once that the first rhinos he ever saw in the wild were the first rhinos that he processed in the wild, meaning he saw them, 2 weeks later, they were shot dead. But that's the dedication of our keepers at San Diego Zoo and at other zoos that are doing everything they can on behalf of wildlife. So back to answer your question. I want you to think about bats. I want you to, they're the flying fox bats that live in Asia, they live in Australia. Those bats pollinate flowers. Our bees pollinate flowers. Without some of these animals, we're not going to have crops for people to eat. So you have animals that do things that help humans, but people don't even realize it. The insectivore bats that live in the United States help keep insect populations down. So there are things like that that people absolutely don't realize are important. And I think what's important for people to realize is that we need to cohabitate with our animals because it is an ecosystem and everything is related to each other. Another example, we've had these horrible hurricanes down in the Gulf of Mexico and on the Atlantic coast. We used to have mangroves that were growing there. And now with the destruction of the mangroves, you've got no protection from the hurricanes and you've got no protection from the waves that come in and the storm surges. And so people who live, you know, at ocean level, because we've destroyed so many of the mangroves, get flooded. So there are things like that that are absolutely interconnected. And what people have discovered, if you do things sustainably, like sustainable fishing, the fish come back and everybody can be happy. They can fish, but they don't deplete the fish populations.
Mm. Well, I know that as I have learned about the various species where we live here in Santa Barbara, we live in the rural part up in the mountain above Santa Barbara. We have deer. We've had bears, at least one. We've had, some type of wild cat. I don't know if it was a mountain lion or what have you.
It could be a mountain lion. It probably is a mountain lion.
We have bats. Matter of fact, my wife wants to find some place where we can get more of them and put up a habitat for them because they eat the bugs. You know, if they're mosquitoes, yes. Problem, that kind of thing.
Yes.
We have had, of course, squirrels, and of course, we have all the little rodents, and we have beautiful birds. We have crows and blue jays and hawks and on and on and on. And the one thing that, you know, anytime it's like, okay, we've got rodents in the attic. We need to do something about that. Well, the last thing you want to do, of course, is use rodent bait that's poisonous, because if the rodents eat the bait and then they leave the attic for the open fields, and then you get a hawk or any other animal eats the rodent, then they all die.
Yes, absolutely.
So you've got to find other methods. But at the same time, you also have to acknowledge, where are we living? We're living in their habitat. Short and simple. I don't care how much we civilize an area, like even Los Angeles, for that matter, or New York City. That is still the animal kingdom's territory. And when you see animals show up there, they're just trying. This was their home before ours,
yes,
long ago. And I'm curious as to how you, and I say you being the San Diego Zoo and zoos in general, what are some of the methods that you go through in terms of bringing in, say, a new species into a habitat? I mean, there's got to be a lot of study and research to make sure that whatever habitat you bring them into is going to be conducive to their health and well-being.
Yes, let me use the California condor as
sure.
an example.
Mm-hmm.
So we had area, and this program has been going since the 80s, as I mentioned. So we had releases of the birds kind of up in your area, Ventana, wilderness area. And you think everything is going well, but then we had birds coming down with lead poisoning because you had hunters who were using lead bullets, and then the vultures would eat the carrion and then they would get lead poisoning. So that is something that we have had to deal with. And you kind of discover these things along the way. And then we discovered that they were having issues with power lines. So now, before we release them in the wild, we teach them to avoid power lines. Now, the next thing, you've got those giant windmills. And a lot of birds are killed because they fly through and, you know, you've got the propellers going around. So now we are working, you know, and they're great because they create power. But you can't have a California condor being killed in one of those because they're still a critically endangered species. But we work with the power companies, and the powers have transmitters that when they're close to the windmills, they shut off. So you're always learning. And as you go in time, sometimes new things crop up that you hadn't expected yet. We're not going to give up. I mean, we absolutely aren't going to give up. And in some of our projects, I'll give you an example in Sumatra. Sumatran tigers are critically endangered. Sumatra is in Indonesia, and they live in the southern part of Sumatra. There are probably 400 of them left in the wild. So you absolutely need to save their habitat. But the local villagers were having issues because the tigers were coming in and killing their livestock. And, you know, you have to work with the local people. You have to understand that they're just trying to make a living for their family. And so they would come and kill the livestock and they would kill the tigers. So we worked with other zoos to come up with livestock predator-proof pens. And we have donations and we go into villages and we build these pens where their livestock can go at night, safe from the tigers, and that prevents the villagers from killing the tigers. So there are things like that that you can do with locals to mitigate some of the problems that are out there. Now, another problem could come up facing the tigers. I don't know that they're having as big a poaching problem in Sumatra as they might be in other areas, but but there is some poaching, but it could escalate. So you solve one issue and then another comes up, but our scientists, our researchers and our conservationists are in it for the long haul. And when a new issue comes up, we are there to find a solution for it.
And the one thing that is troubling to me about all of this is the discussion I hesitate to use the word controversy, but I can't think of any other word, people arguing over human existence over animal existence. In other words, they're pitting the two against each other almost. How do you and people, say, in the environmental movement, you know, in wanting to maintain the endangered species list and the various ecosystems to support those species, whether they be endangered or otherwise, how has the message changed, and has it helped? Has it helped to get people to understand what the problem is?
We like to talk about how things are interconnected. And for me personally, I think we need to save the animals because they deserve to be saved and we share the planet with them. But I think the important thing is that everything is interconnected. And when you burn down the Amazon, climate change, global warming is going to increase. And when you have the glaciers melting, then the ocean is going to rise and everybody who lives in a beachfront community is going to be underwater. So I think our educators try to teach people how things are interconnected and how what happens to the animals will eventually happen to humans. We need green spaces. We need our forests. And I think a lot of people are getting the message. I'm not going to get into politics, but I think you need a balance between industry and protecting the planet. And there is a way to do that. But I think some people are very short-sighted and all they think of is their pocketbooks and not how it's going to affect the local people who live in that area as well as the wildlife. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the local people in some of the more remote areas depend on the local habitats and the wildlife for their livelihoods.
Well, I know that there's a sad little song that came out in actually the 70s. This is what I find so fascinating about music. No matter how much the times have changed, like on the calendar, the music of a different era seems to be just as relevant now as it was back then. And the song was basically entitled "Whose Garden Was This?"
Wow. And who sang that? I don't know that song, but it sounds like it's got an important message in it.
It's sung by John Denver, and it talks about, I've seen pictures of flowers. I heard they were lovely. I would have loved to have smelled one. And it goes on and on to talk about blue skies and so on and so on and different things. And, you know, and it's like, it's just as relevant today. And the thing is that our oceans are filled with plastics down to the microscopic level.
Yes.
And if you think that you are free and clear when you're eating seafood of the plastics, think again. I don't care where you pull it out of the ocean. Odds are there's plastic. You are eating plastic. Now that's embedded in you. Now what are you going to do? You have no clue as to what that plastic is going to do to your body. And so it's just, I don't know. I would hope that we haven't reached the point of no return.
We have not, but we're getting close. And we keep saying that the children are our future. And at San Diego Zoo, we are inspiring children to be the next generation of conservationists. But, you know, a lot of this is very depressing, and I have to have hope. We cannot give up, but we cannot leave our children with a horrible world. As you were speaking about earlier, we can't leave them with a mess. We owe it to our children. We owe it to our grandchildren to leave them with a sustainable, clean planet. It's not fair to them, and I think I'm so glad that the children are marching on behalf of climate change and wildlife and habitats, but we have to act. It's not too late, but we're reaching a tipping point when it's going to be really tough to get back to the other side of that tipping point.
What is it that they say about doing the right thing? That are you supposed to, and I ask this rhetorically, but I'd love for you to address this. They say that even if nobody is watching, you should do the right thing. And let's just say, for the sake of argument here, Georgianne.
Yeah.
That we have absolutely no control whatsoever over the climate change, that we've had absolutely no impact, and it's just because it appears that it's going faster than in previous cycles. And we just say, you know what? Forget it. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to keep living the way consumer, producer, consumer, produce, consume, produce, consume, produce, et cetera. Garbage here, garbage there, everywhere. And eventually, yeah, we become extinct. And we did nothing. There are many people who do believe that there is a hereafter. There are many people who do believe that that life for us, we are immortal. It seems to me that we're going to have a lot to answer for.
We are. Absolutely. Know.
So talk to me. Talk to me about regardless of who's watching or whether, and I haven't heard this argument, that why should we do anything in the United States? The other countries like China and India, these who have a billion or more people in their countries, they're not doing anything to clean things up. Look at the garbage that's washing up on their shores, and it's probably came from them because it, you know, went down the rivers and this and that and the other thing. So why should we do anything? And then I just sit there going, okay, so why don't you take that attitude with your house? In terms of keeping it clean, why do you vacuum? Right, why right. do you do the dishes? Why do you do the clothes, et cetera, et cetera? Talk to us about this.
Well, the United States needs to be a leader. And I will say that some of the other countries you mentioned are doing things. And the United States, for until very recently, we were shipping our garbage to, I think it was China. Don't quote me on that. So other countries are doing it, and we need... We're a huge country. We're a wealthy country. We have wild places. We need to lead the charge, or at least be one of the leaders in the charge to protect the climate. And if nobody was watching, wow, go outside and look at a butterfly. Look at the wonder of nature. Look at that flower that you mentioned in that song. I've traveled around the world, and I've seen a lot of animals in the wild, and to see a tiger in the wild is magical. And for people who visit our zoos and they see these animals up close and they touch their heart, they know why we need to save the planet and why we need to protect these animals and why we need to work with the countries that are the native habitats of these countries, of these animals, to protect them. Yeah. So I think if people just look out side. So there's something called nature deficit disorder. Yeah. And that is something that was coined a few years ago by an author, Richard Loeb. And what it is think about when you were a kid. And I'll think about when I was a kid. I grew up in San Diego, and we lived on the canyons. And I spent a lot of time outdoors exploring the canyons or playing hide and go seek and just enjoying nature. And a lot of kids today don't get outside. I think probably in Santa Barbara area and in San Diego area, our children have more opportunities to get outside, but they need to get outside and know how wonderful nature is. And that's to bring it full circle back to the books that I've been writing to connect children with these animals to understand that these animals are smart animals, and they are deserving of our help. And so I think even if no one is watching, I'm watching myself, and I know how magnificent nature is, and I want to do everything I can to maintain that, because I know if my friend adopted a little girl from one of the Eastern Bloc countries, and I remember taking her to SeaWorld, and I'm not going to get into the orca discussion, but what I remember is this little girl saw an orca for the first time, and the reaction made the entire group of people sitting around her cry. She had never seen anything in it in her life, and it changed her. And when I see people look at a cheetah up close or a flamingo up close, it visibly changes these people. We have some ambassador flamingos, and that's the book Fabulous Floyd is about one of our ambassador flamingos who's been habituated to be near people. And I had some VIP visitors. I was taking them around the zoo and I said, and now we're going to sit in with the flamingos and you're going to get to feed them. Their words to me were, oh, flamingos. Oh, they're smelly. We don't want to go in with the flamingos. I said, please trust me. Just trust me. Just do this. So they went in with the flamingos. Each one of them had a red cup filled with soft dog food and water. And the flamingos walked over to them and put their beaks in this, you know, cup of dog food and looked these people in the eye from 6 inches away. When we were finished, they came out and said, oh my gosh, we had no idea. We now love flamingos and think they're one of the most amazing birds on earth. So when people aren't exposed to things, they don't have any idea how magnificent nature is. So I think it's important for zoos and families, you know, to get out in nature. And I think that will help.
We're going to come back after this break, but I am going to... I'm going to go out with the song I was telling you about in this break so that you can hear it. And basically the lyrics of this song, and I won't repeat what I said before, but it talks about whose river was this? You say it ran freely. Blue was its color. I've seen blue in some pictures, and I'd loved to have been there. Tell me again, I need to know. The forest had trees. The meadows were green. The oceans were blue and birds really flew. Can you swear that it's true? And it goes on from there. And we're going to go out with this piece in this segment. We're going to come back to talk some more with Georgiana. And we're going to talk with Georgiana Irvine about these wonderful, beautiful, I have to tell you, beautiful colored, pictured books with wonderful text in them as well, telling about the true stories of Floyd and the others involved in this wonderful opportunity to help us make a difference in this world. And that's what we're trying to do, make a difference in this world. We want you to stay right where you are here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back.
Garden was this? It must have been lovely. Did it have flowers? I've seen pictures of flowers, and I'd love to have smelled one. Whose river was this? You say it ran freely. Blue was its color. I've seen blue in some pictures, and I'd love to have been there. That it's true. Whose gray sky was this? Or was it a blue one? You say there were breezes. I've heard records of breezes, and I'd love to have felt one. Tell me again, I need to know. The forest had trees, the meadows were green, the oceans were blue, and birds really flew. Can you swear that it's true? Thank you. garden was this? It must have been lovely. Did it have flowers? I've seen pictures of flowers, and I'd love to have smelled one.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are talking with Georgiana Irvine, and we're talking about some beautiful children's books. And I would say, Georgiana, for children of all ages, actually, they are wonderful to look at. I mean, just
vibrant
in their colors, and as they should be, when you're talking about these incredible true stories about these beautiful animals, both flying and walking. You don't have a fish in there.
Not yet. But we're continuing to expand the collection. So
excellent.
You never know.
Excellent. Well, it's wonderful to be able to not only pass these on. I'm actually going to give the set that I have to my mother, who is a great grandmother, so that she can share these stories with my great niece and great nephew when we go visit them during the holidays. Because these kinds of stories with messages like this, I think they really are critical. I can't imagine what my parents must be going through as they watch the unfoldment. But at the same time,
right,
I know that they're very proud of the six of us, family members, who are doing what we are doing in our lives to try to make a difference in the world, and to bring up families that have a respect for one another as well as for the natural world. I want to ask you personally about how you have changed over the last four decades working with these animals, as well as then creating these wonderful books. What has this done for you? And say, put it in this context, how has this changed your soul?
I have always loved animals, but I will really be honest with you. When I originally got my zoo job and I started in the PR department, I thought it just was going to be fun to work at the zoo because I love animals. I had no idea, even back in 1978, that animals were in trouble. And so for me, it was a wake-up call from the very beginning that we had to do everything we could. And like I said, I've always loved animals, but when I finally learned, once I started working for the organization, that we needed to be leaders and that I'm a storyteller. So I thought, if I can make a difference, I mean, if each one of us, Richard, do something small, that adds up to something big. So I decided back then that I wanted to be a storyteller and do whatever was in my power to be a voice for wildlife and animals. And so that changed me then and there. And then, of course, I've seen animals in the wild, and it's really painful to see what's happening to wildlife. And I know all about wildlife trafficking, but honestly, I don't want to look at those photos anymore. I'm writing a book right now about a tiger who was smuggled from Mexico into the U.S. and I'm addressing wildlife trafficking, but seeing some of the gruesome images from that, I just can't do because I've seen too much of it. But in talking to our scientists, I say, how do you do it? And we all agree, you can't give up hope. You can't stop trying, and we do have successes. So learning the plight of the planet, I think, really changed my soul. And that's what I have dedicated my life to do. And what I want to do is inspire people to care and get involved and do something on behalf of wildlife and their habitats.
I remember hearing two things. Oh, first of all, the song that we played at the end of the last segment goes back to 1970. Tom Paxson wrote the song and sung it. And, of course, John Denver covered it, and then there were several others. Bobby Vitton actually sang the song, too.
Wow.
But the other thing that I heard, too, was that the U.S. government has had statistics going back 50 years on the realities of climate change and the human impact. And for 50 years, nobody has done anything. They've had it going back to the 60s.
As wow, a matter see, of, I didn't know that. That's really fascinating to me.
My understanding, too, is that there is a group of people who are suing the federal government over this issue. And guess what their evidence is? The federal
what
governments.
Is it?
The federal governments. The federal government's 50 years of reporting that we have a problem. And that we've done nothing about it.
I find that fascinating.
Idea. Yeah, I find that fascinating.
I will say that I didn't know that fact. But the government has funded a lot of conservation work. The California Condor Project, we have got funding from a different division of the government. So I don't know that statistic. I think the government should and can do a lot more, but they have funded through grants, much of the conservation work that we have done and other zoos have done. But I don't know that statistic about climate change, and we certainly can make a difference now. It's not too late, but it's almost too late.
Yeah, and I think that we need to look at that. And I think the thing that is disturbing to me is the unwillingness of those who, as I said earlier, poo-poo the science. I don't care about the science. I don't. The science is irrelevant to me. Doesn't matter. I don't care if it's fake or if it's real. We need to clean up our homes for our sakes and for the animals' sake. And I have to say that with the changing of the climates we're experiencing, of course, as you are quite aware, hundreds, if not thousands each year, wildfires around the globe.
Oh, yes. Yes. We've had so many in California. You've had in Santa Barbara. We've had a couple of huge wildfires in San Diego in 2003 and 2007. And it's a big worry. And then the fire in Northern California and Santa Rosa, just all of those fires. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. These books, what was the impetus for bringing these out to the public?
The impetus was to engage children with these individual animals to get to know Karen as Karen and inspire them to help San Diego Zoo Global and other organizations lead the fight against extinction. And I think the best way to engage somebody is to tell them a story. I mean, you can give people all the facts in the world, but if you show them something through a story, that touches their heart and they remember, and it's inspirational and engages them. And so that's the impetus behind these particular books. And these three stories are absolutely heartwarming stories. I mean, the one about the dog and the cheetah, Ruxa and Reina, I still find it an unbelievable story and I live through it. But if we have time, I can just give you the essence was that
We have
cheetah and dogs ambassador animals. And cheetahs are really kind of dog-like in their disposition, and they've got the non-retractable claws. And we think cheetahs are really good ambassadors for the big cat species. And so we pair them with dogs when they're very young, and the dog is like a security blanket for the cheetah. So if the dog says we can go somewhere, the cheetah is very calm. So with Rooks and Reina, we paired them at a very young age, and they were inseparable. So Rooks started growing, and he had an issue with his legs. He had bowed legs, and we thought he'd grow out of it, but he didn't. So we decided to do surgery to help straighten his legs. And our veterinarians were concerned that if we didn't fix his legs, he would not be able to walk. And they certainly didn't think he would be able to run, even with the surgery. So Raina, the dog, is outside the surgery room while he has the surgery on his legs. And when he comes out of surgery, she's there beside him in his kennel where he's waking up. And the vet said, you know, keep him calm. Well, Rooksa, obviously his legs were not hurting. We couldn't keep him calm. And nobody told him that he couldn't run. So he started running anyway. And I saw him yesterday, and I saw him running 60 miles an hour down our cheetah run track. So that's miracle one. When they were 2 years old, Raina got terminal cancer. She was going to die. They gave her 6 weeks to 2 months to live. It was a cancer of the blood vessels. And it was so devastating that the vet stopped all treatment. There was nothing they could do for her. And the trainers were very concerned about Rooksa, what was going to happen when he lost his best friend. So we brought in a puppy, little Ray. And we thought that Ray would keep Raina, the other dog's, spirits up while she was, you know, going downhill, and that little Ray could be a new friend for Rooksa the cheetah. So 2 months passed, and Raina didn't die. And in fact, she didn't even seem sick anymore. So we re-examined her, and it turns out, keep in mind, I'm talking terminal cancer, two of the smaller tumors had disappeared. The larger tumor had shrunk so that we were able to do surgery on it. Then Raina went through chemo, and guess what? Raina's 5 years old, and she's cancer-free, and the duo is a trio. That's a miracle. That's an inspirational story. Plus, it's a way to connect children with cheetahs to see how magnificent they are. So that's the story of the Rooksa and Raina book, and it really was one of those stories that we didn't know how it was going to end, and we debate, if she had not survived, would we have done a book? I don't know. I mean, kids do need to learn about bereavement, but fortunately, she made it through, and it's just a really wonderful story, and kids can learn about having hope. They can learn about the importance of cheetahs, and the list goes on the effects that it can have on kids and their parents.
How about the lesson dealing with these kinds of conditions that just happen? You know, the cheetah gets cancer. You know, and of course, you don't know the outcome and so forth. What about teaching that particular lesson? You know, what if mom and dad, or what if brother or sister, or aunt or uncle, or a good friend, or what have you? Is that another sort of subtext lesson in there?
Absolutely. Cancer is a devastating disease, and I know we're making great inroads. And people die of cancer, but I think sometimes they say that attitude is really important. Not that it's going to make the cancer go away, but it's going to make your life better by at least having a positive attitude. And sometimes things change and miracles happen and people are cured. And I think that this is a story that at least can give people hope. And the world is nothing without hope. And so this story, like I said, started out to connect people with cheetahs and the species. But in the end, I think it's a really great story to give people hope who are maybe facing similar challenges in their life.
Well, I know that I myself never thought that I would be touched by it, but I was. Not me personally, but my second wife and present wife in 2001. And it's like, you just don't know what to do. You know, what position do you take, and how do you support this person? And I mean, I never expected to be a caregiver, especially at what I consider to be the tender age of 40 or 41. It's just not something that you plan for. And you don't really think about it because, you know, in many cases, we don't really want to think about it if we can help it.
Right.
Because
right.
we want things just to kind of go along. But hey, things change, life happens, and so forth. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the sea life. Not from the perspective I was jumping into earlier, but from the standpoint of understanding the various sea creatures, and in particular, because it seems to be forefront in the news these days, sharks. I saw a documentary, or at least a news piece, with Anderson Cooper. He went down to Florida, and he went with this guy way out where there were all these sharks, and they went down into the water with scuba gear, no cage. Because this gentleman, whose name I forget, basically said, sharks are not the vicious, destructive beasts that they're made out to be in the media, movies and television. And these guys were swimming along with them. They would actually, like you've seen with dolphins, they grab the, I guess it's the dorsal fin, the top fin.
Really?
And they were swimming around with them, and they were very gentle with them because they knew these. I wish I knew. They were down in Florida. They were down in Florida, off the Keys, I think. Yeah. And he was basically trying to show people that if you don't bother them, if you don't get in their way and you don't appear like prey, they're not going to bother you. It's kind of like a bear that we had up on our property. You know, I remember I was walking up to the garbage can to throw something away, and there he was eating plums on the ground, falling from the plum tree. He popped up over the hedge and looked at me and said, "What? What do you want? I'm eating." And went back to eating. And I went to the garbage can, threw the thing away, and I went back because I was no threat to him. But let's talk a little bit about sharks in that respect. Whether you're aware of this news piece or not, and the temperament of sharks or not, what about that aspect of being out in the open water as a surfer or a scuba diver, you know, or just swimming in the ocean? You know, you decide, I'm going to just take a swim off the side of the boat here, and so forth and so on. How about trying to understand the temperament, if you will, of these sea creatures?
Well, I am not a shark expert, so I can't address most of what you say, but what I can tell you is that shark attacks are actually rare. We hear about them in the news. More people are killed by dogs every year than by sharks, or for that matter, by mountain lions or alligators in the United States. But I think that we sensationalize, and you know, you need to be cautious. I've read that when surfers are out there in their wetsuits, like along the San Diego coast, that sharks may have mistaken them for a sea lion and they spit them out, but of course they do terrible, terrible damage. I think you need to give wildlife their space by all means, but what's happening to sharks is that people are catching them and cutting off their fins and making shark fin soup. And we need the sharks in the ocean, just like we need all the other land animals. And there's a land animal that had a very bad reputation, and that is the gorilla. And I've seen the gorillas in Rwanda. I've seen the Eastern Lowland gorillas in what was then Zaire, Democratic Republic of Congo. So King Kong made gorillas seem fierce and horrible and aggressive, when gorillas are actually gentle giants who live in a salad bowl. They're vegetarians. And of course, if you tried to take a baby gorilla from its mother, or you angered the silverback and the troop. But I think there are a lot of misnomers about wildlife, and I think it's up to people to learn the truth about them. But it's also up to the media not to sensationalize. I didn't see the story about swimming around with holding the fins of the shark, so I really can't comment on that. And I don't know what species of sharks, and I'm not even sure that I agree they should be in the ocean grabbing sharks and swimming with them. But I think when you do read those stories, they are not the norm. Like I said, more people are killed by dogs than by animals. This is in the U.S. like sharks and alligators and mountain lions.
Well, again, it's to me, it is. Apparently, as a matter of fact, I just pulled this up. It's actually great whites off the
That's
Florida.
Shocked.
Yeah. Off the
That's
Florida
amazing
Keys.
To me. Wow.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I'm just kind of looking here at the story itself. And basically, it's with what a gentleman they call the Shark Man.
is he a researcher? Does he study them? Yeah,
yes. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Anderson Cooper swam with these great white sharks without a cage as part of his report for Planets in Peril, Battle Lines. That's the name of the story. And
wow.
He talked about the experience, and they went diving with basically great whites. And there's a big controversy over whether or not these cage tours operators are actually changing shark behavior and so on and so on and so on. So I won't go any further into that. But anyway, you can look it up under that name of the program called Planet in Peril Battle Lines. It was fascinating. I got to see the whole piece, and it was, and of course, you know, he's a little freaked out at the beginning, but then once he gets down into the water with the gentleman and the cameramen and all of this kind of stuff, and they're, again, they're not moving around and flopping everywhere and attracting attention. Right. They're down there observing. Big difference. And I know that Jane Goodall, and there are other, I remember seeing a nature photographer who sometimes will sit for hours, if not days, to get just the right shot of an animal. Okay.
Absolutely.
And they just try to sit as still as they can and as quiet. And of course, even in the report, you know, they're whispering very quietly so that, you know, so that they don't draw attention to themselves.
Right.
But I think one of my favorite pieces is on Sunday morning, the Sunday morning news program, news magazine called Sunday Morning on CBS. The last piece they do is, and now we leave you today, this morning, in the hills of the Bradshaws where the antelope play. And they'll do 30 to 60 seconds of that. Maybe the snow is falling. It might be raining. Could be sunny. Just different parts, literally, of the United States in nature. And it's a wonderful way to end that hour and a half, but also it's a wonderful way to spend some time just sitting out in nature and not doing anything, just listening, just observing.
And we are guests in these wild animals' habitats. And so people have to keep in mind that they're still wild, you know, they're not domesticated animals, so we need to be respectful of them. And you're absolutely right, you're in their territory, so sit quietly and watch them and let them do their thing.
Yeah. And also when you're out there, matter of fact, as of this recording yesterday evening, I was trying to do some modifications in the house, and the wife came up with another solution, which was, you know, just fine, even though I had spent the last 2 hours working on it. Basically, I got to the point where I said, okay, fine. And there was this pile of stuff that's been sitting in the same spot out on the hillside for like a month or more, because I've been meaning to take it to the dump. And finally, I said, I'm putting it in the truck, and I'm going to at least move it to another area where there is more of this stuff, so at least it's right. Not out in the open. And of course, as I said, we have deer that occupy the same property that we rent on. And it's so wonderful to see them. They actually respond, especially to my wife's voice, when, you know, she'll call out to them from the screened in porch area. And I have to say, it is quite remarkable. And of course, we're also into the whole, what is the meaning of a fox crossing my path kind of thing, you know, that kind of stuff.
But it's wonderful that you're appreciating your local wildlife. Yeah. People laugh at me because I have a water-wise garden now, but a few years ago I had flowers in the front yard, and I actually planted flowers that I knew the rabbits liked, because I like seeing rabbits in my yard. People said there are millions of them. I said, I know, but I enjoy looking out the window and seeing a rabbit out there.
Yeah.
And I have a dove right now that's nesting on my porch under the eaves and right by the front door. So I come out quietly and I talk to her and say, it's okay, mama. And I love that.
Yeah.
We do. We have amazing nature in our backyards. And a lot of people might have deer, but they might have other things. And it's just a nice way to end your day.
I have to say, it warms my heart, mine specifically, because of the childhood I had with animals, to see how close they will get to me or that I can get to them. And I'm not trying to get up and pet the deer. I'm not going to go that far. But I've had instances as a child where I was chased by dogs as a paper boy, which is pretty typical.
Right.
I have been bitten in the hand by an ostrich. I've been bitten in the face by a goose.
Ouch. That sounds like it hurts.
Not fun. Of course, we didn't have a dog as a pet in our home. My dad primarily wasn't a fan of dogs. We did have a cat who basically adopted us. It wasn't something like we went out, let's get a cat. It showed up and stayed with us for as long as it wanted to stay. So, and of course, my fear of the animals in particular had more to do with my vision, not really being able to see as well back when I was in childhood.
Right.
But it's so nice for me now. It's like when bees were flying around. Oh, my God. Now I stand still and I say, hey, thanks for coming by. I just stand there and I greet them and I say, hey, it's great to have you here. Glad you're here. You know, and I'll be honest with you, I would do that even if there wasn't a problem with the bee species depletion. But I think that that's one of the things that a lot of people are missing, and it sure would help in their day-to-day life, their driving attitude, for one, their attitude
Absolutely.
Towards work, and the way people act and react around them. It can do a world of good. Have you seen that kind of change in people, say, as they meander through, say, the San Diego Zoo, and they're looking at the animals and... And have you noticed a level of appreciation for the natural world by folk guests at the zoo?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And I'll give you an example. We have our safari park, which is north of the zoo, and we have these big open enclosures. And yesterday, we have a tram that takes you around, but then you can also do what's called a caravan safari. So it's a big flatbed truck with a shade on it, and you go out and you drive out among the animals. And it's magical because the animals are doing their natural behaviors. And so there were 14 of us on the truck, and there were most of the people had never been to the safari park. And most of them liked animals clearly because they were there. But we had an opportunity to feed the giraffes. And we had a couple of giraffes that came up to the back of the truck, and people would hold out their big acacia leaves and the giraffes would take them out of their hands. And I could see these people changing, and I could, by the questions they were asking, I could tell this was changing them. They already liked animals, but now their appreciation for nature has grown. And then when the guide talked about some of the conservation work we were doing, people wanted to know, what can we do to help? That was just yesterday afternoon out on the caravan safari. So yes, I have seen people change, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a close-up encounter like that. I just know that when a child has never seen a rhino and all of a sudden they're seeing a rhino and its baby, that changes them, and they hear it and they smell it. And I think video is fantastic. I think that's a great way to bring animals to people, but I think there is nothing like seeing an animal in the fur, as I might say.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about it, because like at the zoo, if a child comes to the zoo and sees our giraffes, they look up. This is a 17-foot tall animal, and they can really see how large it is, you know, and because they can compare themselves, and, you know, a child who's 3.5 feet tall, and they're looking up at the giraffe. So, yes, I have seen it change people, and I have seen stories, like the stories in these books, change people as well.
Yeah.
So it's a magical experience, and that's why I do encourage people to, one, get out in nature, and even just go to their park. Mm. Even if you're not, you know, embedded in a near a national park, even if they go to the local park, there's wildlife there, and just appreciate it and keep your eyes open. But also visit your local zoos.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's extremely important. And get connected. It has been said on this program many, many times by our guests that if you are feeling out of sorts in any way, shape, or form, you need to get out in nature, even if, as you just said, it's just going to your local city park and just sitting on a bench and watching the birds in the trees and what have you, and just reconnect. Walk barefoot in the grass if you can, you know, if you feel okay doing that, to ground yourself. Because it's going to do wonders, not just for your disposition, but it's going to do wonders for your soul, for your spirit. And I think that that's a marvelous thing. And hey, if you get a chance to go to the zoo, whether it's the San Diego or the Santa Barbara, or it's been a long time since I've been to the Phoenix Zoo, you know, take a trip, you know, spend a day there and just absorb that energy from those wonderful creatures who are part of our society and they are part of our civilization. Georgianne Irvine, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing your story as a four-decade-plus experiencer and a participant with this other aspect of our society and our civilization, the animal kingdom, and sharing with us these beautiful animal stories for children and children of all ages. And certainly, I'm sure that they can probably look for them not only on Amazon, but also through sandiegozoo.org. Is that correct?
Well, actually, yeah, they can go to shopzoo, shopzoo.org, and they can absolutely purchase the books through that. And we have plush that go along with the books. We have a Karen plush and a Floyd Flamingo plush and a Rooks and Raina, but they can also go on Amazon as well and purchase the books. And they can look up Karen's Heart or Fabulous Floyd or Rooks and Raina, or look up my name, Georgianne Irvine. Mm-hmm. And I really hope people have a chance to take a look at these books and read the stories of these animals. And I like to say, I'm just the storyteller. These are the stories of our animals and our people who work with them. So I'm just a mouthpiece, and it truly takes a village to be able to put these books together and tell the stories.
Yeah.
So I just am the conduit for all of the great work that our San Diego Zoo and Safari Park keepers are doing and for our amazing animals. Each animal has its own incredible story.
Yeah. Also want to send you to another website if you would like to participate in trying to help make some changes in the world. You might want to try endextinction.org as well if you want to learn how you can be a superhero for animals and wildlife of all kinds, as well as help lead the fight against extinction. You can visit either sandiegozookids.org/save-animals or endextinction.org. And we encourage you to go to, now you said it was shopzoo.com or org?
Yes, .com for shopzoo.
Shopzoo.com. We'll be linked to that site so people can go there. And I'm going to have to get myself some of those plushies. I bet you my dog Angus would love them.
You might like
He'd
them.
Love to play.
Before it's funny, I was just going to say the Floyd seems to be the most popular because we have a little bandage around his leg, and kids say, oh, he has a boo-boo on his leg. I want the flamingo.
Well, we've actually given Angus, our big 100-pound King Shepherd, monkeys. And he seems to love carrying them around the house. We refer to them as his babies. So he loves carrying them around. I have two things. Number one is, should you ever find yourself up here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you come in studio and maybe talk about the newest book that'll be coming out, number 4 and or 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever. I know it takes a while to write and photograph and all of that stuff, but we'd love to continue this conversation. I think it's extremely important, and it's a lot of fun, too.
Well, thank you. I would love to speak with your listeners again and meet you in person.
I have 3 final questions for you, Georgianne. And again, I thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. The first question is, who is Georgianne Irvine?
Wow, I wasn't expecting that question, but I would say that I am a kind-hearted, positive person who loves to share stories about animals and life with people.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to inspire people to care about animals and take action and do something. It can be small, but do something to protect our planet, protect our wildlife, and help us lead the fight against extinction.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to share the stories of animals and make a difference on behalf of wildlife, their habitats, our planet. And I have discovered that is absolutely my life's purpose.
Well, Georgiana Irvine, again, thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. We greatly appreciate it. And we want to thank you for listening to this program. We encourage you to go to shopzoo.com to pick up a copy, two copies, three copies, a copy of each of the three books or the plushes and find out more. Go down to the San Diego Zoo and enjoy the animals there. And I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.